You're listening to a UCD Humanities Institute podcast. Karen Wade is a researcher on the Nation Genre Gender Project. In this podcast, Karen talks about the use of social networks for studying novels, with a particular focus on Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice.
One of the questions that frequently gets asked about this project is, why bother creating social networks out of novels? Or what do you expect to find out from your social networks that you can't find out from just reading the books themselves? Well, when we started out on this project, we weren't entirely sure what we were looking for. We had some high-end goals, like gaining a better understanding of the effects of genre or the author's nationality on the structure of the novels, for example. But otherwise, we more or less went in with an open mind, in the hopes that when we went digging, the data that we found would point us in interesting directions. And this definitely turned out to be the case. So we spent a long time working our way through our list of books, compiling data on all the characters, and revising our methodology as we went along, because every new novel added a unique challenge that we had to take into account. In Jane Eyre, for example, we realised after our first look at the novel that Jane was hardly showing up in the social networks at all, and this is because our algorithm goes through the text looking for names that it recognises. But while Jane is present in every scene, she rarely refers to herself. So we actually had to go back in and add her in manually. Another challenge came up about a year into the project when, at the suggestion of one of our team, we decided to start tracking character attributes. So what this meant is that we began compiling certain types of information on the characters in the novels, including gender, marital status, familial relationships, occupation, and whatever other details we could find in the text. And before we knew it, we'd built up a truly enormous stockpile of data. Initially, our goal had been to analyse as many novels as we could manage, but because the work we were doing in compiling the datasets was so labour-intensive, our scope has been comparatively limited. We've now completed analysis on 46 novels, and we have some more coming down the pipeline. But the upshot of taking this approach was that instead of creating a broad dataset encompassing many novels, we've managed to create a very detailed one. So now we have essentially a very comprehensive list of what characters appear in each book, where they appear, how they're distributed, and what kind of people they are. And what we can do with this is create social networks that are effectively abstract models of the novels. This lets us examine the books from different angles. They let us look under the hood of the text, as it were, and identify features that aren't necessarily visible from the reader's point of view. We can zoom in and look very closely at certain aspects of an individual book, or we can zoom out and make comparisons between different novels and different groups of novels. So in terms of the finely detailed view, I'm going to take a specific example from Pride and Prejudice. So we've put together a sequence of networks, which you can see on our website, and they each represent a different chapter from the book. These are called dynamic networks. They show changes in the character networks through the novel, chapter by chapter. And the chapters that we've chosen to focus on show quite a simple, but at the same time quite compelling, progression through the novel. They represent a sequence of important moments in the relationships between Elizabeth Bennet, Mr. Darcy, and Mr. Wickham. What you can see when you follow through the networks is that although Wickham, the classic deceiver, is an antagonist, his role is really fundamentally important to the development of this classic, iconic romance between Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy. So Lizzie and Darcy get off to a rocky start with the famous snub he gives her in Chapter 4 when he refuses to dance with her. But over the course of the next few chapters, they're forced to spend some time together during her sister Jane's illness, and the pair start to become a bit more interested in each other. However, it's only when Wickham appears on the scene and starts stirring things up that you begin to see in the networks a really strong connection blossoming between Elizabeth and Darcy. But this isn't necessarily a positive connection. So chapter 15 is where Elizabeth first meets this handsome new stranger, Mr. Wickham, and there's a bit of mutual interest there, and then in the next chapter they get their first chance to have a proper sit-down discussion over cards and supper at her aunt's house. And Wickham immediately takes this opportunity to start bad-mouthing Darcy, who's an old nemesis of his. In the network for this chapter, this conversation shows up as a really strong triangular link between the three chapters, right in the centre of the graph. Now, when we look at this triangle, we can't necessarily see the specifics of the connection, which is this intense gossip session between two characters about a third character who's absent. What we can see is the strength of that connection, because it shows up as much wider than the others in the chapter. And we can then track its development further, following the course of these relationships throughout the later chapters of the novel. Wickham, as we know, is a master manipulator, and he's good at making use of public opinion to paint himself in a good light. But you can see the point at which this strategy begins to break down. This happens in chapter 35, where we get to read Darcy's letter to Elizabeth, in which he makes a full and frank confession about the time when his sister Georgiana almost fell prey to Wickham's fortune hunting. From then on, Elizabeth never quite falls for Wickham's patter, although he continues to go around wreaking havoc on the novel's plot and its social networks. And you can see more about how that progresses if you have a look at the Pride and Prejudice case study on our website. So the networks provide some interesting ways of identifying links between characters, but what's almost more interesting to my mind is that they allow us to get at the mathematics underlying the ways in which the novel's societies work. Examining the connections between different people means that we can identify how they group together and which characters are influential. And this is where you get the sometimes surprising results. So to give you another example from Pride and Prejudice, when we were looking at centrality measures for different characters in the novel, one character jumped out at us, and that's Mrs. Phillips. So centrality in network analysis is basically a way of measuring how connected a node or a character is within a network. But there are various types of centrality that you can look at. Degree centrality, for example, is just a measurement of how many connections a node has, while a node that has high betweenness centrality is good at bridging the gap between different groups or clusters within a network. And Mrs. Phillips' centrality was surprisingly high for all these different measures. So when we asked members of the public to rate how important they thought the different characters were, Mrs. Phillips only came in at number 40 overall of about 120 characters. And by the way, if you filled out that survey for us, thank you very much for your contribution to the research. However, in terms of betweenness centrality, Mrs. Phillips comes in at number 19. This makes her what's called a broker. She's a character who fosters connections between different groups. So who is Mrs. Phillips and why is she so important? Well, she's the aunt of the five Bennett daughters. She's Mrs. Bennett's sister. She has no children of her own, but she has quite a close relationship with the two youngest Bennett sisters, Lydia and Kitty. And as Lydia tells us, she's very interested in the girls' welfare and specifically in helping them acquire husbands, which is basically the only career option that's open to young women of their social class at this time. Part of the reason that Aunt Phillips has such high betweenness centrality is because she hosts a lot of social events, such as the one we saw in the previous example, largely to try and introduce her nieces to eligible young bachelors. But as we discovered when we looked closer, her high betweenness centrality also points to another interesting aspect of the novel. Mrs. Phillips is an absolutely inveterate gossip, and she knows how to work her social connections to the max to get the kind of information she's interested in. She watches what people are doing out of her front window, she stops servants and tradespeople in the street to find out what the local dignitaries are up to, and then she spreads all this information around amongst her friends. In the network, this means that she's connected to lots of different groups of people because she's a goldmine of information about her neighbours, and the networks show her talking about people as well as talking to them. And so finding out this fact meant that we were led down a really interesting vein of research into how the local society in and around Meryton works and the ways in which information is transmitted between characters. And we're currently working on a couple of papers on those topics, so watch this space. So we've talked about social networks on the level of the individual chapters and then at the level of the novel with character centrality measures. But if we zoom out again, we can take an even wider view and compare different novels against one another. For example, we know that from our overall dataset that out of the 9,630 unique characters we've identified, 55.4% are male, 22.7% are female, and for the rest, we don't know what sex they are. So obviously, there's quite a lot more male characters here. Since gender is part of what we do, we want to know which of our novelists are more interested in representing women, and specifically, how often they represent interactions between female characters. So we looked at how the novels measured up in terms of gendered interactions in the networks. How many are interactions between two women, how many are between two men, and how many were between a man and a woman. Now, other researchers who've applied social network analysis to literature have put forward the theory that when you find lots of female-female interactions, it's more likely that the author is a woman. When researchers at the University of Coventry looked at the Icelandic sagas, for example, they found an unusually high proportion of interactions between women in one of their texts, the Laxdala saga, and they've suggested that this might indicate a female author. And that line of reasoning holds out quite well for our novels. When we look at the top 10 most female-oriented social networks, 9 of the books are authored by women, with the only exception being Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, which comes in 10th place. But even in the novel with the most interactions between women, which is Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility, they only make up about 45% of the interactions. By contrast, the most masculine social networks, which are to be found in the Sherlock Holmes novellas, the works of H.G. Wells, and above all the rest, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, these are all between 80 and 95% comprised of interactions between men. And these works are all male authored. So can we say for a fact that women are more likely to write about interactions between women? Well, at 46 novels processed so far, our corpus is still fairly small, but these early results do seem to point that way. Pride and Prejudice, in case you're wondering, contains the third most female-female interactions, after Sense and Sensibility in first place, and Belinda by Mariah Edgeworth in second. So overall, what's the point of social network analysis in the study of literature? Well, nothing is ever going to replace actually reading the books, and we definitely don't suggest that our method is an alternative to reading novels closely and enjoying them. Instead, we've found that social network analysis is a really versatile tool that can provide a variety of different new kinds of insight into novels at different levels, both close up on the level of individual chapters, and far away, looking across as many novels as you have the resources to include. So in a nutshell, rather than replacing traditional close reading, we'd suggest that social network analysis can be a complement to it instead.